1, 2, 3, 4, Medium Talk.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Medium Talk on the Blackout Test Premium Network. This is a interview show where we talk to people that I like to, you know, get to know better, get to know special things about people that you don't, you might already know, but you don't know everything about them. Case in point today, I have a guest on that, many of you guys should be familiar with. It's my man Sterling, aka the Wound God. What's up, dog?
Chilling, man. What's good with you?
Chilling. First of all, thank you so much for, doing the show, man. I'm really glad that, you know, that you, decided to come on with me.
Thanks for having me on, man.
No doubt, man. And today we're going to talk about, Sterling and his battle with Hidradenitis Suppurativa.
You did it pretty good for a beginner, yeah.
Okay, cool. It might have been Suppurativa, but I was close.
No, you got the end right. It was just Hidradenitis.
Oh, Hidradenitis. Yeah, all right, cool. I gotta, step my game up a little bit. But First things first, man, like, what exactly is Hidradenitis Suppurativa?
All right, I'll give you basically the shorter version of the Wikipedia definition. It's a disease that affects the sebaceous glands and the African sweat glands, which are normally under the arms, inner thighs, groins, buttock, or under the breast, makes a ball anywhere from the size of a small pea to about as large as a baseball.
Wow.
Basically, if you ever seen or had a boil, it's like that, but varies in size. And what's different about hidradenitis is with a boil, you have a boil, you throw some cream on it or whatever, it eases the pain, it goes away, it drains, it heals up, you're good to go. Hidradenitis, if not treated right away, will give you more than one at a time in the same area, and they don't heal for a very long time, like years on end. So they're just open wounds.
Wow, years on end.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow, now, is that how you came up with the nickname The Wound God?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that was it. I saw, everybody was going around with their this, I'm that. And I'm like, hold on, I'm pretty sure I do have this on lock of being the most wounded nigga out here right now. So I'm going to take that and I'm going to make it mine. I'm taking the word back for myself.
Now, how long have you dealt with, HS?
If my math is right, I want to say since maybe 19 was maybe the first time I can really remember, and that was 7 years ago. But at that point, I remember before when I was maybe like 14, 15, I can remember having like a soft spot on my head every once in a while, and it was really throwing me off, like a really tender point.
Yeah.
But I remember when I was 19 getting out the car once, and I felt like a really, really tender spot on my thigh that it hurt to touch, and I had to like change the way I got out of the car. But I'm a young man, I don't really give a fuck about my health because I'm invincible at that point,
right?
And I just kept working. I didn't want to be one of those guys. I never got to finish college. I didn't want to be one of those guys that just becomes nothing. So I was constantly working and working. I knew if I had to take time off to get this checked out, I might lose a job or so. I just kept going, going on with that, just really ignoring it and just dealing with the pain. And then I would say maybe a year or two later, it popped up in another spot. And that was in my buttocks, right in the crack. And it, of course, made it a living hell to walk.
Yeah, now it had your attention.
Yeah, so I can't sit. I just can't sit down. I can't walk fast, stuff like that. So it was definitely a bitch then, but still, I didn't want to be the guy that lost the job because I already had lost one job from the same disease. I just didn't know it at the time. I was working and I got so sick I threw up blood.
Wow. From stress.
Yeah. And I was maybe 2 weeks into the job and went to the hospital. And the hospital was like, yeah, you need to, not do college and full-time work together. You shouldn't do it. So I was like, okay, cool. And then my job fired me because I was still in that 90-day probation area. So
is Now, was throwing up blood like a symptom or something?
No.
Okay, no. So it's just kind of like you were just that stressed out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the disease really works off of friction, moistness, and stress.
Mm.
Because from what I've been told, it's part of the pituitary gland that really deals with all this. So, you know, it doesn't form right when you're going through puberty. Mm. So, yeah, like any stress-based situations, it could be an hour to a week, like more wounds will start popping up, like out the woodwork from that stress. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah. So it just basically, I guess, took all over my body and it got a little bit crazy. I went to the hospital.
It's almost like being an X-Man. Cause that's like, that's how like every X-Man origin story is, where it's like, yeah, they hit puberty, something stressful happened, and then they got powers, except in your case, the powers were, you know, these boils or whatever that hurt.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is the, you know, this must be how it feels to be that fish X-Man they tried to have a while back, that his only power was breathing underwater, where it's just like, what am I going to do with this? I look like a fish, you know?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, like when you first like started having symptoms or whatever, and you first started, you know, going to the hospital, were they able to diagnose it right away?
No. It's really hard to diagnose this disease, which kind of made it even more awkward when I actually did get it diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe, like, you know, I went to my doctors, you know, every couple months and stuff, and they really were like, oh, well, you just got boils. You know what I mean? They didn't think it was a disease. They're like, you know, just, you know, keep them covered and stuff. Use some, you know, boil ease or whatever cream that you can get over the counter and just do that and you'll be fine. And I think it was maybe a year after I first got the ones in my buttocks, and it was really, really bad.
Mm.
And at that time, I'm still living with my parents, and I didn't wash my clothes. Like, I just, you know, went to work. That's all I did. I would just work, eat. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom saw my underwear, and it was just the whole, like, pair of white boxers that were stained blood red from top to bottom.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So she saw it. Because, you know, I would tell her, like, I don't really want to go to work today. It hurts. But, you know, she's like, nah, you got to go to work. You know, just typical shit, you know, your mom would do to keep on your ass. I'm like, you're right. I go to work. And then she finally saw that. She's like, nah, nigga, you got to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And also, like, especially that area of the body, it's going to be something that probably makes you feel, like almost, like, ashamed. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, not saying you should be ashamed, but, like, just our minds associate, like, that area of our body with, like, such negativity, where it's like, well, you know, should I even tell anybody about this? You know, I don't want to have a sit down conversation with my mom about, you know, my boxers and blood, you know?
Yeah, that was really it. Like, I was really ashamed. I had no clue what was happening with, you know, with my body. I thought maybe my girlfriend had given me some shit. I, like, no clue. I'm just mad at the world, not understanding why this is happening to me. Because, you know, it's not a big disease, so you can't be like, oh, I might have this.
Right.
You just don't know.
Yeah. Now, what, going through the process, what did you think it was before it was diagnosed? Because, like you said, at some point I definitely would have been like, oh no, my girl burning me. You know, she gonna give me some type of crazy ass, like, herpes that nobody's ever heard of. I'm gonna die. What the fuck is this shit? So, like, what all was the process in your mind, you know, trying to figure this out?
I think the first thing was AIDS, straight up. Because my cousin, who's been in jail for a really long time, I guess he was talking, you know, on the phone with my grandma. He was talking about how he had blood in his drawers and shit in prison. And I'm like, hold on, this nigga got it. And I got it. But nobody knew I had it at the time. I'm like, yo, what the fuck? Like,
nah. Oh, man. Yeah. Yes. It's like the worst. Different. It's like a real life version of WebMD, where you know, you have a symptom. And your brain, like, you click on three things, and all of a sudden it's like, you got AIDS, nigga.
Mm-hmm.
Except worse, because, you know, like, you're getting it secondhand. Like, you know, your cousin has this issue, and you're going, I have that issue. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
That's crazy, man. So, when, you know, whenever, you know, you're going through this, did you have a talk with your girl? Like, hey, what, you know, you need to get tested. I need to get tested. Like, what are you giving me? Or did you, or did the diagnosis and stuff from the hospital come before that?
No, I got a test just, you know, like every 6 months, cause I was still just in a relationship, not married or anything. So I got a test and nothing came up, but I was still able to really hide it from my wife, well, my girl at the time, because it, you know, like she would sleep over a couple nights, stuff like that. And I remember one night I had a wound in my armpit and I guess it exploded.
Oh.
Cause you don't know, you know what I mean? Like when you're asleep, you're able to sleep through the pain unless it gets way too much. And I just remember waking up and like, you know, just getting up, pressing out of bed and there was just a pool of blood there.
Wow.
And I just freaked the fuck out. And then, you know, my girl saw me. She freaks the fuck out. And then she looks at me and then, you know, I'm like, oh, look, there's something going up A, B, and C. So, yeah.
And so this is, so the wounds are painful then, like.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess we kind of glossed over that, but you know, that I'm sure that's a huge part of it. Like, do they have you on like pain medications and stuff to deal with it too?
No, I got myself off of pain medication.
Okay.
When I first started getting surgeries in 2009, at that point, they were at first just giving me oxycodone, which is Percocet, which is pain reliever that lasts about 4 to 6 hours. And that really wasn't enough. You know what I mean? Like, at this time, I just had my first surgery out of what I think was three surgeries so far.
Mm-hmm.
And the pain, like, just still all over my body. It was insane. So I went to pain management. And the doctors there put me on Oxycontin and Percocet at the same time because Oxycontin is a longer lasting version of Percocet. It would last 12 hours instead of 4 to 6.
Yeah.
So I was constantly on that for about a year.
Wow.
And yeah, and I just became a zombie. I really just, you know, woke up to eat, to take medicine, and then that would knock me out within 45 minutes. Wow. And that was basically a whole year for me. Like, I don't remember much from that year. So once I was able to, I was like, you know what? I'd rather just be in a decent amount of pain and be able to remember my 20s.
Right.
And remember my girlfriend and my, you know.
Right.
Like, yeah, so I just deal with the pain now.
It was like being in Memento or some shit. You just
keep
waking up being like, when did we get married?
Yeah.
Also, what, like, because, you know, you were talking about you know, just like the drug treatments and all this stuff and having surgeries. When did they decide, like, what was the first thing where they were like, you should get a surgery for this? And also, actually, before you even answer that, we'll get back to that. What is the cause of HS? Like, is that, you know, like, what kind of, you know, who gets it, who doesn't get it? Like, is there, you know, is it something that people, you know, you something you do, is, you know, something like that?
Nothing like scientific points to that. You know, like, the disease is so rare that people try to say, oh, well, you should do this, you should do that, you know, go gluten free, do this, don't eat nightshade, stuff like that. But there's no scientific proof to that yet. For what it really seems, it can happen to anybody. It's just something that happens when you're going through puberty. It affects, nobody really knows the real answer, so it's between 0.2% of the population and 0.41% of the population. So, there's not much to really go on to find out.
So, when is, like, the first time that they go, all right, you have HS, and you're like, is there steps before you get the surgery, or do they just go, surgery?
No, yeah, by the time I went to a doctor for it, it was just surgery. The disease is 3 or 4 parts. I'll just use the 3-part basis for it.
Okay.
The first one is you just have a boil, and that's it. That's all it looks like. And that's where really where the problem comes from, because if you look at it, it looks like a boil. So you'll try to treat it like a boil, and you won't know until stage 2, when it's almost about to become too late, where you find out it's more than just that, and it's an actual disease. And what happens there is, like, let's say you have one boil in your armpit.
Right.
It'll start tunneling under your skin and making another boil in another area, maybe a couple inches away. So kind of like a traveling area for the disease to go.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's stage 2. And then stage 3 is that same thing happening in multiple areas.
Wow.
And I was at stage three by the time I went to a hospital for it. I had it like in my armpits, I believe in my groin at the time, and in my buttocks. So yeah, it was crazy.
How big was your biggest ever, you know, boil? Because you said they can get like baseball size or something.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had one that big. Yeah. I would say maybe half the size of a tennis ball, probably.
Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It was some bullshit.
Yeah, I would be looking at myself like, did I get stung by a wasp last night and I just didn't know? Like, how fast do they come on? Like, you know, I know you said they grow. Do they, and that they heal very, very slowly, you know, sometimes up to a year, you said. So, like, how fast does it, like, start? And do you, like, know immediately, like, oh, shit, this is going to be one?
If it's just from normal friction and stuff like that, it can take anywhere from 2 weeks to a month to really start giving me pain. But I can notice it maybe after a couple days because, you know, just be taking a shower. And I'll touch a part of my body, and you won't feel pain yet, but you'll feel something in your body that's not there. Like, that shouldn't be there. Like, you know, like kind of a hard ball on part of your skin. And you'll know it's coming, but there's nothing you can do at that point because you don't want to drain them early because it can make it worse.
Wow.
But yeah, if it's like a really stressful thing that happened to me, I remember I found out my mom could possibly have cancer. Mm-hmm. And when I found out, within 2 hours, my scalp started exploding.
Wow.
Like, just straight off. Like, I never felt pain come like that before. Like, you could just feel, like, my head kind of felt like it was bubbling almost. Mm-hmm. And then it started, you know, I didn't know because I was like, can't see my head, but it started bleeding. And my wife was like, what the fuck? Like, you're bleeding. So I had to go to the hospital. Then the hospital didn't know how to treat it. They thought it was a suicide attempt. And it was a whole big thing for
why would they think it was a suicide attempt?
I have no clue. It was something that me and the doctors had a long talk with because it, you know, you go there for help and they're like, oh, well, you could possibly have tried to kill yourself. And I'm looking at them logically, like, of all the ways I could try to kill myself, I would try to cut my scalp off. Like, let's think about this. You know, the nurse is like, well, no. She's like, well, we want to keep you in, a hold for 72 hours. I'm like, well, you're not going to do that because, you know, it didn't make sense. So finally I had to call a couple people and I think I was in there for maybe like 12 hours, but it was crazy.
So basically it is actively triggered by stress. So are you, so are you constantly monitoring your stress like levels all the time?
Yeah. I can't get too angry. It's weird because I can get worked up. Like, you know, I can get hyped for a football game or playing a game on Xbox, stuff like that. But if I get, like, viscerally angry, and I don't even have to, like, shout or anything. If I just get mad, like, truly mad, I can feel it coming on. And it sucks.
So, you were talking about your wife. Is she able to tell, like, when you're hiding, like, your anger? Because she could be like, Sterling, I know you mad. You bleeding from the head, nigga. So you're mad. Stop lying to me.
No, because of the disease, I really just say what I feel now. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, so it doesn't get to that point. I just like, if me and my wife are getting in an argument, I know it could be something that got me, you know, mad where it got into, like, an actual argument. I was like, we got to stop. Like, I'm not about to be this hurt over something that, you know, is some bullshit that will get over in 15 minutes or whatever.
So you're actively like living the movie Liar Liar all the time. Just for hygiene's sake. Like, look, I don't want any bumps on my head. So let me just tell you the truth. The meatloaf was terrible. Okay.
Yep.
I'm only mad because it's too late to go out to eat. And I just need to tell you so that I can let it out.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, man, now you said, girlfriend and wife, was this the same person the whole time or?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Me and my wife, Marquita, we started going out. I don't even know how long. She'll probably kick my ass for saying it, but it was a long ass time.
Well, she sounds like a keeper, man. If she like, cause when she first started dating you, I'm assuming you weren't diagnosed with this.
Yep. Yeah, that was it. That's really how I knew. Like, you know, she was just going to school to be a doctor and, she moved down here from Boston to go to the college in New Jersey, which is maybe a 40-minute ride away. And when it got so bad that I couldn't work or anything anymore, and I went to the hospital and they found out what the disease was. And I think about maybe 3 months later, I started having the surgeries. Mm-hmm. She just took off from school and moved in to deal with my wounds and wound care and stuff like a nurse would do and shit.
Man, women are the fucking best, man.
Seriously.
That is crazy. That amount of love to somebody to have, like, you know, I mean, even when I was like in the hospital and stuff, waiting on Karen and stuff, it was like, you know, it was crazy because I was getting so much props from people because that's how ain't shit dudes are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They was like, you actually sleep at the hospital? It's like, yeah, it's my wife, but there is a couch here. You know, why would I leave her to be in here by herself for, you know, at the middle of the night? You know, that's crazy. And they're like, wow, you're just such a good man. And I'm like, dudes must really be like, drop off at the hospital steps and be like, bye, bitch.
Stop over like once a week with some chicken noodle soup and some Robitussin.
Right.
To work out.
Stop over with his other family, his new wife and shit. Like, I don't know how it works, but, women are amazing to do that, especially, you know, to come out of school and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I gotta ask, man, how does this kind of stuff affect, like, you know, other things like your love life, your, you know, being active, like sports, you know, things of that nature?
Being active is, I can't really.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to do anything major, like let's say, I walk more than a mile in a day, mm-hmm. which is extremely rare at that point. I am probably laid up for 2 to 3 days afterwards because of the constant abrasion to the skin.
Wow.
That I can't move. Like, I remember me and my wife, we went to PAX East in Boston in March, and it was a 3-day event. We went for 2 days. By the third day, I could barely make it out the hotel bedroom. And when I got home, it was like 2 weeks till I could do anything. And as far as the love life, it's changed some, but it's kind of hard how to word it because it hasn't really affected any of my general area.
Right.
So I can still get what I need to get done.
Right.
But, you know, trying new shit, fancy positions.
Right.
I don't want to move my limbs that much. So, yeah. But, like, the worst is really on the medication because when you're on painkillers, your nerve endings are shot.
Yeah.
So I was just feeling nothing during sex.
Oh, that's got it. That's terrible.
Yeah, she hated it. It was like 2-3 hours. And she's just like, nigga, no, just stop.
Pushing rope.
Yeah.
At that point. Yeah. You know, and the other thing too is, it feels like you would have a built in excuse to be like a minute man if you wanted. You'd be like, look, I'm just trying to keep, you know, all the friction down. And
I wish that was a thing I could do.
Yeah, like, no.
So bad. Just give me 5 minutes and I'd be so happy.
As much props as I give women, no woman's that reasonable.
Yeah, no, that was really it. Like, and that was when, you know, she was my first major relationship.
Yeah.
And I realized at that moment, women were like, nigga, I don't want it for that long. Like, stop. Yeah. I got shit I want to do. I want to go to sleep.
Yeah, 3 hours, dude. Like, at that point, no one's having fun. You know?
Yeah, it really was just work.
Yeah, it's like both of y'all just trying to accomplish a mission together.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's crazy, though. But I feel like, you know, a lesser man would just be like, oh, I came. That was 3 seconds. But look, the good news is there was no friction. Nobody got too moist. You know what I'm saying? So it's good for me. Sorry about you. But maybe next time. But before you got, you know, diagnosed, before you start having issues, were you active? Like, did you, like, you know, go out, do a lot of stuff? Or were you just always kind of like, did this change up your lifestyle, I guess is what I'm saying?
Yeah, it definitely did. I was always overweight, like most of, about maybe 80% of my life, until I realized I wanted to go into the military.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never not active. I was just overweight and active. Like, I played football in high school, you know, played sports and stuff after high school stuff, you know, just chilling with the friends. I would basically, my normal day was like waking up at like 8 o'clock in the morning, taking a shower, and I wouldn't be back in the house to maybe like 1 o'clock in the morning every day. Just, you know, having fun with friends, going to work, stuff like that. And afterwards, you're lucky to get maybe an hour a day out of me now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So like, what is your lifestyle like now? Like, do you like basically chill at home? Like, you were saying that, you know, you had to stop working. So like, you know, is there a way to get money to, like, disability or anything mm-hmm. for this? Like, how does all that work?
Yeah, my normal day consists of, right now, I try to stay awake the same schedule my wife does. So I'll wake up in the morning, and we're on a juicing diet. So, you know, we'll make the juice, drink that. That'll be breakfast, and then we'll do it again for lunch. And it's really just about not moving too much. So normally I'm on the couch, trying not to be in the bed, maybe walking around, really listening to the podcast and stuff a lot to keep my mind active. And for money, it's disability. Luckily, it's a registered disability. So I get a decent amount of money from there. My wife works full time. So bringing that together definitely pays the bills.
So like how, cause I do the same thing. I work from home now or whatever, as people know. Mm-hmm. And it is still really important to me that I keep the same hours as my wife. You know, I try to walk out to a car in the morning just so that I'm up starting my day. Even if I'm multitasking and I'm watching TV and working on the website and checking the subscriptions, like it's something even if I actually was doing nothing, I'd rather be up than to be like the nigga that sleeps till noon. And, you know, it's just,
that's really what it was. Cause I was doing that for a really long time.
Yeah.
And my wife would work like, originally was working 2 to 8 and I would maybe sleep to maybe when she went to work at 2 or even later. Mm-hmm. And she come home and I'm wide awake till like 3 o'clock in the morning and she ready to go to bed and shit. Like nothing really synced up. You know what I mean? Like we really weren't talking anymore because we were just kind of going through the motions of getting to the next surgery. So now aligning schedules really helps out a lot.
Yeah. I can imagine that too. Cause like, I mean, obviously it's got to take a toll on your relationships, got to take a toll on your lifestyle and all of that stuff can kind of affect you. How about the way people treat you? Cause that was another thing I've noticed is, I remember, I think you hit me on G chat and this had to be maybe 2 years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we were talking about, I think you were going to send us a microphone for the studio, which of course, thank you. Cause you did. And you know, for me, whenever someone says they're going to do something for us, I never, and it's another personal, I never believe them. Yeah. And I never count on it because I feel like that way I would never have to be angry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's cool if you do it, but let me go buy a couple mics for myself.
Just in case.
Yeah. And if
I ain't gonna do this shit.
Right. Yeah. And if the mic comes, it's cool. You know what I mean? But it says, it says a lot about people when, you know, they deliver on their shit. So like, you know, I remember we were talking. I was like, thanks for the mic, blah, blah, blah. And it was like, hey, how'd you hear about the show and all this stuff? And, that was when you started telling me about HS, and I just, you know, at the time, I just remembered it as the big ass name for a disease. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, you don't really talk about this. So I was going to ask, you know, do you not talk about it that much because people treat you differently and you don't want to be treated differently? Or is it just, you don't feel like explaining this shit all the time?
It's a little bit of both. I realized maybe like, a year ago, I really tried to get in touch with more people with my disease and on Facebook and Twitter like that and stuff. And I noticed it's all they talk about. And it was the most boring, saddest shit in my life. Like, the disease is a piece of shit. I hate it.
Right.
But talking about it constantly is just going to keep you in a state of depression. And there's so much better shit, you know, like, even if you can't go outside, you know, watch a TV show, read a book, whatever. Just stop talking about this fucking disease. We get it. It sucks. I know it. So I really stopped talking about it for that reason. Also, because nobody wants to hear about it if they don't know what it is. You know what I mean? It's not cancer. It's not one of the quote-unquote sexier diseases where you can just say the name and people get what it is. So I don't really talk about it too much. And in personal life, I try to wait until I talk to them, to people about it. Because once they know how fucked up you are, they treat you differently, like ASAP. And I hate that. Like my mom, she's been sick my whole life. Like she was fine until she gave birth to me. And because of complications of labor, she got thyroid disease and Addison's disease. And people hear about it. You know, she went into cardiac arrest twice in 1988. And people hear those words and it doesn't really register for them.
Right.
But once they see her take like 10 pills in the morning so she could stay alive, they automatically treat her like a glass doll. And the same shit started happening to me. So in my family, I just let them think I'm just a nigga that don't work and I'm a bum. because I'd rather have that than the random pity they try to send to you after years of being like, oh, you're hurt, I'm sorry. Nah, nigga, no. You weren't that interested in before when I said I was sick. I'll just let you think I'm just a nigga that don't got no job. Right. So that's normally what I do now.
Yeah, that's complicated because on the one hand, I understand because I like all my relationships to be genuine.
Mm-hmm.
Like I hate forced relationships. I hate I don't like things out of obligation. Like I don't want you to be like, I didn't check in with Rod this week, we must not be friends anymore, or shit like yeah. that. But at the same time, I don't have anybody being like, this nigga won't even get a job, you know, if I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I don't hang out with them, there's not an assumption of this nigga doesn't do anything with his life. He's terrible. Like, yeah. It's crazy to me, like, that you are living with, like, the negative impact of, you know, not wanting to basically be a charity case.
Yeah, that's really what it is. I'd rather be treated normal and then, you know, sometimes, you know, you'd be like, hey, Sterling, you want to go out for this ABC? I'd be like, nah, I'm busy. I can't do this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my real close friends, they know, like, yeah, nah, dog, like, the pain is killing me. Mm-hmm. I can't go out tonight or whatever. But I'd rather have that than everybody knowing and then checking up. Because once they check up, there's this moment when they believe there's an end to it. And they don't want to believe there's not a cure for the disease.
Mm.
And then that gets super fucking awkward because I've already accepted I'm going to live with this for the rest of my life.
Mm.
And then you kind of have to see that person in front of you go through that. And you don't want to deal with that shit. Like, they're like, oh, well, you know, it could be gone. Yeah. Well, you know, anything could happen. I'm like, nah, it has no cure. Like, I'm cool with this. I understand. And that kind of like gloss over the eyes, like, oh, so this is forever. Like, yeah, nigga, it is. So stop worrying about it. I got this.
What determines who you tell and who you don't?
Just the personal relationship with them, if I trust them, you know, stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah, because I feel like that's what would determine it for me, except if you said something like shady about me or something, mm-hmm. I would definitely bring it up angrily. Although I guess you said you have to monitor your stress level, so... obviously that can't be a good tactic, but I feel like I would be like, you know, it's like, man, why don't you just get a job? I'd be like, cause I got this HS, nigga. You know what I mean? And then they'd be like, whoa, I'm sorry. I didn't know. That's right. You didn't know, motherfucker. Cause I don't tell everybody. Like,
yeah, I've done that once or twice. Like for me, to be honest, what I did, because I felt like just saying it since nobody knows what the disease is.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, like I said, my head was really fucked up. And I just constantly wore a do-rag and put sterile gauze inside. Mm. So it did, you know, the blood didn't seep through. And they were talking all this shit like, you know, you're not doing this and that. You know, you say you have these problems, but nobody's heard them. I just took my do-rag off and let them see my head.
Mm.
And you could see like the blood, the pools, the dip, like the craters, the pus, all that shit.
Mm.
And that was really the last time. I put a couple pictures online for people to understand. And yeah, it's really been pretty decent ever since.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I feel like it's the big joker. Like, people would be like, okay, well, I apologize. And you may play as many video games as you want, sir. I did not know what the fuck I was talking about.
Yeah, because normally the disease normally tries to hide in dark spots so you don't see it. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't walk up to a person like, oh, he has, you know, what I have. You can't know until basically the person's naked. And I got it on my scalp, really, because I wore do-rags, and it became a dark, moist spot because of always keeping... you know, the heat from the do-rag keeping the heat and stuff like that. So, now, yeah.
Now, did it change how you treat and how you see other people, too? You know, like, other people that suffer from other diseases, other people just in your life in general, your relationships with people, you know, did it change any of that?
Yeah, I definitely, now, because I was always an asshole growing up. I still am. But I'm an asshole to everybody now, but I give everybody a baseline of respect. Like, you don't know what this person's going through in this moment. You might just want to let it slide unless it gets too out of hand. But definitely with disabled people, like, just no. Like, if you're in my way and you're acting like a dick because you're disabled, I might say something about it. Because I've been disabled for too long and I don't treat people like shit just because I can. Right. So when I see that kind of may set something off. I'm like, hey, don't be a dick because you're in a wheelchair. It's not cool, dog. Like, I don't give a fuck about it.
Yeah, I never even thought about that. But yeah, that's a different angle on it. But yeah, I feel like that would happen. Because like, I've actually been in your shoes. It's kind of like when I, you know, me being a waiter for a bunch of years or whatever, when I see a waiter giving shitty service, I like, part of me gets more offended because I'm like, I've done that job before. And you don't have to give a shitty. You don't have to be shitty at it. You could be better. You just don't want to.
Yep.
So, now what about, you know, when it comes to stuff like, you know, your mind, keeping it active, like what do you do necessarily? Cause, you know, you're basically saying you're sitting around, you know, you're still getting up on time. You're still, you know, doing things as far as around the house or whatever, but you know, you're just trying to keep a regular schedule. So what kind of stuff do you do to keep your mind active?
Every once in a while I read a book. I'm not really too heavy in the reading just because from the pain medication, it's hard to keep constant focus on something sometimes. But, what I like to do is definitely read articles a lot online that may pertain to my interest in tech and stuff like that. Podcasts are normally running like 80% of the day for me. Mm-hmm. And if not that, throw some video games on and, you know, play online and get some, you know, keep my mind working quicker, I should say, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you know, like at least occupied, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, cause like that is a thing too. Like, even if it's just kind of something to do. Cause like I did the same thing with podcasts when I was at work that was my thing. I would listen to shows cause it was like, I need something to do with my brain because, you know, my job was just not that demanding, but it was very tedious and it took a lot of time. And I was really good at it, but it was still this matter of like, I have all this brain and it's not being used. So that's how I listen to shows. Now, how'd you first get into like podcasts? Like what, you know, how'd you discover them? Like what were your first shows you listened to? Stuff like that.
Oh yeah, that's easy. I remember it. It was, Larian. He had, Yeah Right Radio.
And
I believe my favorite artist at the time, Joe Budden, was on. And that's how I found out about Yeah Right Radio. And then a couple episodes after, he had this couple on I never heard of named Rod and Karen. And I was like, let me check out their show. Like, that might be cool. So I checked out your show, and it was history ever since. I'm like, this shit is awesome. Like, I love podcasts. And I was just really listening to you and Nerdist in the beginning. And then realized about the podcast Chitlin' Circuit. I really just came out there and started, you know, just absorbing everything I could.
Now was that during treatment that you started this? Was this just when you were sitting around the house and you just needed something to occupy your mind that you started finding these shows? Or like, you know, what was the impetus to find
it? It was definitely during treatment because I would have never found the podcast when I was working. I was constantly out the house just, you know, working at one job or another. So I never had time for stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it was during the summer of 09, I believe. I remember cause that's when I got on Twitter, and I remember Larry talking about his show, and that was right around the time, I believe June of 09 is when I went to the hospital, and they told me about my disease. And September 09 is when I officially went on disability, and October of 09 is when I had my first surgery. Mm-hmm. And right after the first surgery, I remember I could barely walk. Like, I had no skin on my ass after the surgery, so I couldn't walk really. And I just downloaded all like 45 episodes of the Black Eyed Tips, and me and my wife would just, you know, sit home, try to stay pain free and play Halo and listen to you guys.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. And your wife is awesome, by the way, because like I've played Xbox with both of y'all in the same party before. And, it is like, a completely different world, you know? Cause the other thing is I've talked to Quita, like, she's emailed the show before, you know, G-chat, stuff like that every once in a while. And she's extremely professional and nice and all this stuff. And then I get on the Xbox with y'all and I'm like, these are some ratchet ass niggas. Like, I see how they got together.
Yeah, that's really it. Like, in real life, I try to be more of an upstanding person, but on Xbox, fuck that. Like,
yeah, if you made the list, then you're already my friend, so what's the point of pretending?
Exactly. If you're in a party with me, you gonna know me, nigga. Like,
Now, when we were talking about, you know, one of the things that you said you don't really talk about this that much, or at least you didn't used to, is because, you know, you didn't like how, like, it would change people's view in your eye, like, view of you in their eyes and change, like, you know, just this idea of, like, treating you as, like, a special case and stuff. how do you, because like I'm sure there's gonna be people that hear this now, maybe they hear it through the grapevine, hear it on Twitter or whatever, how do you want people to treat you after hearing this? Or, you know, like, what is your preferred method of, you know, like being, you know, like, you know, having a relationship with someone?
Well, the main thing is it's okay to ask questions. You know what I mean? Like, I lost shame a long time ago with this disease. So you can ask whatever questions you feel are necessary. But as far as like treating a person, I would say just treat me like a dude that gets the flu just a little bit more often. That's really the best way to think about it. Like, hey, I can probably ride with you, but there's a chance that, hey, I might be sick and I can't do it today. That's really it.
Okay.
Yeah, treat me as normal as possible and we'll be good.
Yeah, I feel like my ability to forget about shit, because like I pretty much treat people as far as like I kind of treat people however I see them as like treating me and treating others. So like if I like most of what I know of a person is just like if they're kind of good or bad, quote unquote. Like, okay, Sterling is cool with me. When he's talking to other people, he's not really being a dick to them. He's a cool guy. Like, that's pretty much my thing. So, and I've had people talk to me, like, tell me and stuff, like, well, I have this, you know, this issue, this disease, this whatever. And every time, without fail, I just forget. Like, honestly, like, a day or two later, if you brought it up again, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that is right. you told me that. Like, I'm sure we've had the, yeah, you did tell me that conversation a couple times, just because I always forget, because I don't... You know, not, and I don't, I like, it might even sound bad, but I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Cause like, I can't do anything for or not for that. And I'm actively not going to root against you. You know, it's like, so it's just one of those things where it's like, of course I wish you the best, but are we going to play Xbox or not?
That's really the way I believe most disabled people want to be treated. Like, just don't care. Cause we have to basically not care also. It's part of our life now. So it's just our normalcy. So if somebody else is treating it like it's not normal for us, that kind of throws us off more than anything.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, I could dig it, man. Like I said, this, I can't even, I don't know. I just don't really see people as like their quote unquote set of issues. It's just kind of like, what, you know, is that dude cool or not? Is pretty much the number one issue. Now, if we're not cool, that becomes an issue. You know what I mean? so that's definitely how it could change. Now, when you were talking about treatments, man, can we talk about like what are the stages of treatment that you know, and what is that like? You know, because I'm assuming since you said the first thing for you was like surgery, you must have been past the surface level treatments.
Yeah, I can remember it vividly because, like I said, it's really hard to find this disease. So once I realized what the disease was, which I think was either June or July of 2009, which was a really weird experience in itself because I've had this disease, didn't know what it was. And then I walked into the hospital. And, you know, if you've ever been in the ER, if you're bleeding, you kind of get preferential treatment. So I walked in, the doctor saw me, and it wasn't house. It wasn't 50 minutes of him trying to figure this shit out. This dude walked into the ER, walked into my room, looked up from his cell phone and said, you have hidradenitis suppurativa. Mm. And I looked at him like, what the fuck did you just say to me? You never heard that word before, you know what I mean?
Right.
So by that time, like, I was already in stage 3, but I knew what the disease was now. And I was looking it up online and I found a surgeon out in Willow Grove, Pennsylvania. And this was after I went to Penn State, and they actually sent me to the wrong surgeon because you need a plastic surgeon to do the surgery because it's basically just skin removal.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to this lady. Her name was Marlene Mash, and she does great work for the disease, but I was too far along on, and that was kind of almost my breaking point. Mm-hmm. And it was right before my birthday. I think I was turning like 22 or some shit like that. And I walked in, I sat down in on her operating table. Because she has a surgery, because, you know, it really deals with the sweat glands. Mm-hmm. And she'll remove the sweat glands from a certain area to help stop the disease. And she saw my wounds and just, like, started crying. She was like, I can't help you. You're too far along. I can't do anything for you.
Mm.
So I just, like, kind of walked out the building because there was nothing more. I didn't want her to see me that fucked up. And I didn't want to be around anybody. You know, I'm thinking about ending my life. I don't know how I'm ever going to live with this disease for another 80 years or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, I think a couple of days had passed or what have you, and she gave me a call saying that she was at some kind of gala or something, and she was sitting at a table full of surgeons, and she mentioned me because of how fucked up it was that, you know, she saw me and she couldn't help. And a surgeon at the table was like, yo, send him to me. I think I can do something for him. And that's literally what happened. Like, wow. I just met this dude that she met, and he looked me up and over, and he's like, okay, I see your disease. Yeah, it's fucked up, but I can do this. I can fix you. And the first surgery was, like I said, in October 2009. And since you really can't, there's so many boils, you can't just treat it like, you know, I lance it, empty out the wound and stitch it up. Mm-hmm. He just had to take the skin off that part of the body. So the first one was my ass, and it was basically the crack to about maybe half of the actual cheek had no skin on it. And wow. That stayed that way for maybe a month to 6 weeks, I believe. And then he had me come back, and he did a skin graft and put the skin graft on the body, because at that point, it was my first surgery, and not everybody bodies act the same way towards a skin graft. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes nothing catches at all. Sometimes, you know, 50%. And I told him, I remember, I was like, I want to get 75% of this skin graft to stick. And sure enough, after surgery, like 2 days later, he's like, hey, you got like 76% on your body that stuck to you. And what he did was he put the graft down. This is going to sound fucked up, just to let you know.
Okay, go ahead, man.
He put the graft down, and then there's this, I forgot what it's called, but it's like a clear plastic, almost like saran wrap, basically. Mm-hmm. And he put that down in the crack, and then he took sutures and stitched from the top where I actually have skin on my ass through the hole of my asshole. Whoa. And then back up to the top to actually did it like several times on each side. So the actual stuff that was holding the skin graft down would stay in place no matter how I moved, because it was kind of being held down by, like, you know, you could kind of act like it was tension wire.
Right.
And just keeping it down like that. So that wow. was an experience when I had that on my body.
I can imagine. I'm assuming you were passed out for this part.
Yeah, for the surgery? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of one of my favorite things about it, is because, like, you're in extreme pain before the surgery, and then you just go to fuck to sleep, and you wake up, and you don't hurt that same way anymore. Because the pain's so much that even when I'm not on morphine, it's pain, but it's not the same pain, so I can deal with it. Mm. But, yeah, just you wake up kind of all better, you know what I mean? You just got to wait for your body to heal from it.
And you were saying that it's something that, I mean, that's only your first surgery. Yeah. It's something that you had three surgeries so far?
The first surgery was the one on my ass to remove the skin. The second one was a skin graft a couple of weeks later. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was my groin. Okay. It was originally supposed to be the same thing all over again, removing all the skin from my groin and letting it grow back. That way there would be no hair follicles and sweat glands there for it to, you know, do any damage to. But on the surgery table, he looked at it and believed that he could just remove the skin from any meeting parts of my body. So, like, where your groin meets your leg, like that area in the joint.
Yeah.
And right under your stomach. So basically that's what he did, like, left all the skin in the middle and just chopped off a little piece of the skin in the middle that actually had a wound on it, and let everything grow back. And I think that took maybe like a year, year and a half to heal up altogether, and worked out pretty fine till I would say maybe last year. And my groin, like my scrotum, actually started to swell and get wounds on the bottom. So now we're back here. And the next surgery, he's actually just going to remove all the skin from the bottom of my scrotum.
Wow. So yeah. No ball skin.
Yeah, it's going to grow back. I believe I got to go to a sperm bank before I get to go do the surgery, because he said there's a chance that I might not be able to have kids after. It's going to be crazy.
So, like, when you're getting the surgeries and stuff like that, what is the goal of the surgery? Because you were saying earlier that, you know, there's no cure for it. It's something you're going to have to live with for the rest of your life. So, you know, what is the goal of the surgery, I guess, after you get each procedure?
Right in the beginning, it was just feel better. at the moment. And now I think what I really want is just to get some amount of normalcy that I had before the disease. And that's going to take, it's going to take more than the surgery. It's going to take weight loss also, because your weight can have a effect on the disease, mm-hmm. making it easier to get the wounds and stuff. So, like, while I'm getting the surgeries, I'm in the process of losing weight. So hopefully in maybe 2 to 4 years, mm-hmm. I'll be in a better state of health than I was. And really, if I can just stay there, and, you know, then maybe, let's say, like, once every couple months, I get one wound popping up, mm-hmm. I can just go into him and have that lanced and sutured and, you know, just keep a pad on it. But I'll still be able to, you know, go out and have a decent life and stuff like that.
Mm, okay. Okay. Yeah, that's because, like, that's the thing is, if you get to that point where you're, like, going out, you're having a decent life and all this stuff, and you're being more mobile, you're losing weight and all this stuff, what does that mean as far as the disease is concerned? Like, you're still, is it kind of like people that, not to say these are equal, but people that live with HIV, where it's like, I have HIV, that's never going to change, but I'm still having a active lifestyle?
I would say yes, but I'm only because I'm not actually sure how HIV works. Like, if you get flare-ups and things like that, and that's really what it is. Like, there's always a chance where something super stressful could happen in my life 5 years down the line, and I get maybe like 6 or 7 boils at once, and I'm out of commission for another year or two. Mm-hmm. But I can't live with that fear in my mind and not do anything till this point, you know, till that point. So, yeah.
It seems like what y'all need for HS is a celebrity, man. Y'all need to get a celebrity that gets, mm-hmm. that has HS, that talks about it, and maybe it'll get more recognition and people will kind of more know more about it from awareness.
Yeah, that's what I've wanted for a really long time, because I know there has to be a celebrity out there that has it, but nobody wants to talk about it. And, yeah. You know, like I said, like, you know, you got stuff like breast cancer and leukemia, which I call the quote-unquote sexy diseases, because you can say them and people get it. Like, oh, that's bad. Oh, we can support this. But you say my disease, and they're like, well, what's that? You know what I mean? Like, right. You need somebody, a face behind it, that you can now feel bad for the person, as you know, when you hear it.
Yeah, it's sad that that is where our society is in America, but it's so true, where if, you know, if Michael J. Fox had HS, and, you know, we would be like, oh my God, it's affected so many people. What kind of charity? Where do I donate? What do I do to help?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, are there charities? Are there places where people can go to donate, to research about this or anything like that?
I'm not actually sure. I thought about starting my own charity.
Okay.
But once, like, I started dealing with more people from, you know, that have the disease, I kind of just checked out mentally. Like, I couldn't do that constant sadness. You know what I mean? I'm kind of really just hoping at this point science just catches the fuck up and does something. But, yeah, I haven't seen a charity where it really goes to the research and things like that. I know, I believe Mayo Clinic does some things with the disease, but I'm not really too certain on it.
Okay. Yeah, like, I, you know, it seems like one of those things where, and I'm sure there's a ton of diseases like this where it doesn't, like you said, it's not sexy. It doesn't have a celebrity attached to it. And then, you know, there doesn't really seem to be like a groundswell of information about it. So yeah, I could definitely see how, you know, it would almost be better if you could explain HS as some other disease first. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you said, it's like having a flu, more often than everybody else.
Yeah. I've tried that, and it was funny because I realized when I started to try to explain it by, you know, giving them another disease, that everybody pretty much has a resounding idea that cancer is the worst thing ever made in humans.
Yes.
And I would try to say, like, you know, it's kind of like a cancer of your body, like, of skin, but, you know, the subdermal layers. And they were like, well, no, cancer's bad. Like, and I think that's when I realized, to me, I think I'm probably, you know, biased because I have the disease, but to me, this is the worst disease you could ever give a person, because you probably won't die.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have cancer, you know, there's a good chance you're going to end up dying from this disease.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do something to kill you. Like, you have to basically put an infection in the open wound that could kill you. But the disease will never kill you. It'll just constantly cause you pain.
It's just going to be annoying as shit forever. Yeah.
Yeah, like if you're in the same stage I was and you have no pain medication and stuff like that, like you don't have health care, you just live in a constant state of torture. And there's no end to it. It's just, you know, that's life. You have 80 years of this shit.
Now, do you ever make your mom feel bad about all those days she was on your ass about making you go to work?
Nah, she probably feels bad by herself. I think about it every once in a while. I'm like, nah, I'll let you live.
Yeah, I feel like I would be like Theo when he found out he was dyslexic. It's like, yeah, well, this is why I'm stupid. It's not my fault, you know. But yeah. Then my mom would probably be like Cliff Huxtable when he found out Theo was dyslexic and was like, nigga, I don't care about that shit. You better learn how to do that math. Yeah. Well, look, man, I feel like I've asked every question that I had and some more. You know, I can't even think of anything that I didn't ask or that someone might be wondering out there. I guess, if I were you people out here listening and you're like, you know, cause you know what I'm thinking now is everybody who ever gets a boil, like everyone who works out and gets like a friction, like bump from now on is going to be like, oh my God, I got it. You know what I mean? Like, cause this, like, they didn't know about this an hour ago, but now, like, if you like shave your armpit too close, get an ingrown hair in there, and start to get a bump, you're gonna say, I got HS, let me go to WebMD. And let me tell you, people, if you go to WebMD, then you got it.
Yeah, right? If you go to WebMD, you're gonna have super AIDS. Like, yeah. That's just the way that shit works.
So just, if I was y'all, just, I went and looked up some pictures on Google. I know it's not the most, beautiful looking disease, obviously. But it's no doubt that you ain't got it. Cause I was thinking like, you know, I work out sometimes and if my underwear is too tight, I'll get like a little bump at the underwear line, and I went to go look it up and I was like, oh, that's not even close. I see.
It's some extreme bullshit. Like when it gets to that stage, you'll know, trust me.
Yeah. And also you'll have a newfound respect, I think, for Sterling, and his demeanor. Cause like, I feel like, if I was dealing with anything like this, you would be able to tell on all our podcasts, all the, tweets, all social media, cause I would be a asshole to everyone. Like I would constantly be annoyed. Like I don't even like when, I don't even like talking to people when I'm a little too hungry. If I actually was in pain, I probably would be a dick to everyone all the time. So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me, Sterling, man. I appreciate it. Like I said, people, I'll probably make, Hydradentist, Superativa, the actual, name of the show or something. So you guys can like see how it's spelled and go look it up for yourself. Like I said, it's interesting. There's always so many, I feel like everyone has a story, and this is kind of like another just proof positive of, I would have never known this shit about Sterling. I didn't ask. It just kind of came up. I feel like a lot of people wouldn't know it. Now that you do know it, make sure you still treat Sterling, you know, cool. He's not going to break. He's not made of glass. He's still gonna be around, guys. Still gonna be playing Xbox, saying nigga 100 times a minute. Sterling, also, when is your next surgery, man? Like, what's the next step for you?
October 25th at 7:30 a.m. That's when I get the skin removed.
Okay. All right.
I just got it. It was supposed to be the week before, but, it's gonna be like a 2.5 hour surgery. Mm-hmm. And the person that set it up, my surgeon's secretary, thought it was really just going to be like me having surgery and leaving, but I'll be there overnight, and my surgeon's going to go on vacation the day after, so he wanted to make sure he was there all the days after my surgery in case anything goes haywire. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the week after the 25th, early in the morning, so I can be up by like noon or so.
And what kind of recovery time does it take? Because you say you'll be possibly going home within a short period of time. So like, what about the at home recovery time?
That's going to be probably anywhere between, I would say, a year and 2 years, maybe.
Wow.
What ends up happening is I take whirlpool baths every morning normally when I'm recovering from disease with about, I believe, a quarter cup of bleach in it.
Whoa.
Yeah. The whirlpool bath, they normally try to have you do it at the wound care center or the hospital, but luckily we were lucky enough to actually have one in the house that we got built. Mm-hmm. So that way I don't have to spend, you know, months on end in the hospital or going back and forth to the hospital because it's about an hour away. So, you know, just fill up the tub with about hot, you know, hot water, maybe like two or three capfuls of bleach, and just sit in there for about 50 minutes because you can't scrub the area. You have no skin. You know what I mean? So you kind of just let the bubbles and the jets with the bleach kind of just disinfect the whole area. And then you wrap it up and do it all the next day.
So it's like you and Sammy Sosa soak in bleach every morning. And
yeah. He does a little bit more than me. I think he uses the whole tub and no water when I'm kind of the other way. Yeah.
Right. He got his formula messed up. Yeah. Maybe he's the celebrity that's suffering from it and we just don't know because he overdid it with
the
bleach.
If that nigga's using that much, he is good by now.
Yeah.
Shit.
He got the cure. He was like, yeah, you just got to go the whole bottle of bleach every morning. And you'll be fine. You'll be able to play. Right. You could go play baseball and everything with this shit. You just need steroids and bleach. Yeah, that's crazy, man. But, yeah, like that recovery time of like 1 to 2 years, the, you know, going to the sperm clinic, like, it's good to hear that, you know, one, you have high spirits, and then two, like, that you are like dedicated to like kicking this shit's ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that, cause I feel like, those are the only kind of choices that you have other than just being like depressed all the fucking time. And ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah. I tried being depressed for about a year. It sucked. Like it's pretty shitty. So I was like, nah, you know what? I'm stop being a bitch about this. And, I want kids and I don't want to be the kind of dad that really can't do shit with his kids.
Right.
So I want to make sure to get healthy. Cause you know, my wife's going to be a doctor, she's barely going to be at home, so I want to be the one to take care of, run around with him, you know what I mean? I just don't want to throw him in like a fucking playpen and be like, sit your ass over there while I play Xbox. So I want to get healthy so, you know, I can be you know, that super trophy dad and shit.
No doubt, man. Well, yeah, that's cool, man. I'm glad I stayed asking you questions because I would not have found out that part about the bleach in the whirlpool.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that shit.
Yeah. You and my whites are the only people I know that go into bleach in the whirlpool all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man.
That spin cycle, get them extra clean.
Of course.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me, Sterling, man. Like I said, follow Sterling on Twitter at, it's The Wound Guy, right?
Yeah,
at The Wound Guy. And, like, you know, and you guys should already know Sterling. Like, I don't even know why I'm telling y'all this. But, yeah. And then next time you talk to him, man, like, ask him if he needs you to send him some bleach or something like that, man. I'm sure, you know, bleach is getting expensive out here these days. You know, just mail him some, you know. Is there a kind of bleach that you prefer?
I like to just go with whatever's cheapest. But don't mail me bleach because I don't need Homeland Security thinking I'm doing some bullshit.
Yeah, I also think, I think if we all mailed you bleach within like a week, it'd be like, Rod, I'm not going to be able to do the show from prison. So
basically, yeah. They got me down to fucking grave and shit.
Yeah, they got me. They got this tap now, you know?
Yeah, I'm good. I can't even get on Xbox no more. They think I'm doing some bullshit now. Think I'm robbing banks because I'm playing GTA with you niggas? No, I'm good.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, man. All right, man. This has been Medium Talk, with my man Sterling. Everybody, you know, you're now aware. This is why you listen to the show. You learn shit that you didn't know an hour ago. I didn't know some of this shit an hour ago. So, you know, you're welcome. And thank you so much for, paying to listen to us talk about, you know, all kinds of interesting things at the Blackout Tips. We'll see you guys next time. Until then, peace out.